Carl Hampton.
Right, Carl Hampton.
From Fifth Ward.
From Fifth Ward, Black Panther.
Right.
Right.
And I emphasized to Carl, one, don't name him the Black Panther Party. Okay. So he named it People's Party 2.
Okay.
He opened it up on Dowling, a block from St. John's Church, across the street from Emancipation Park.
Right.
When Carl opened his office, June 1970, July, he was killed by the Houston Police Department. Snipe from top of St. John Baptist Church.
Can I read something to you real quick? It's in regards to Carl Hampton. This is a magazine, the Houston History magazine, in my class.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually taken. I'm actually taking right now in reference to this article. And I saw this before I even started doing my research on you and learning about Carl Hampton. And it's a young lady. Well, she's older now, but she wrote a story about her experiences at the what is now the Emancipation Park, and going there as a kid. You know, she was 8 years old, and you know, the biggest thing that she can remember is eating cotton candy and just having a great time with her family. And she said that, and then there was the day in 1970 when I forced my father, as he drove down Dowling Street, to turn his head to actually see rifles sternly and proudly held by the Black Panthers in front of their offices located at the corner from the park. At home, he insisted that there were no guns. Those boys were bluffing, he told me. He said, I dared him to drive back to see for himself. He did, taking me with him. As he drove near to the site, I regretted my dare when I saw my father's hands trembling on the steering wheel. My father was born in 1899. As I watched the fear grow in my father's old eyes, I saw him turn and look straight into the fearless eyes of those armed young men. Shortly after that day, July 26, 1970, Houston police gunned him down. And that would be...
Our 10-point program number 7 is end the police brutality and the murder of black people. Mm-hmm. That was a major emphasis that black people wanted, is to stop the oppression of white police. For a century and a half, if you research, there are hundreds of unsolved murders of black people, black men, and rapes of black women by police.
Right.
You know, Selma, Alabama, the march in Selma, and my mother by the name is Selma, that showed Bull Connor was no phenomenon. There was no murders in the South. Well, again, I'll say, man, there are hundreds of unsolved murders and rapes of black women by policemen. It would stagger you, man. So that was the emphasis that the black community wanted us to do.
And so the story of Carl Hampton, that was really close to you.
Yeah, very. Carl first was a friend. Carl was no stranger.
Right, absolutely.
Secondly, I sat with him all night. He and I, Mickey and Franco, strategizing about organizing. My emphasis was to don't wolf the police car. Stay away from them. Don't wolf them. You know, but he got pulled into that rhetoric. And he was dead in July. And Franco could have been there, because at that time we were organizing, laying the groundwork for a free health clinic. My thing was, first you organize programs to educate the people, breakfast program, free health clinics, you know, libraries, a recreational social program for seniors and things like that. But May, June, July, Carl didn't get a chance. Kill, snipe. Killed from off the top of St. John Baptist Church. He attacked the police. He confronted them. And this is a southern city. This wasn't Chicago.
It wasn't Chicago.
Or Berkeley or Oakland. You know.
Down south.
We don't know today who that police sniper was. I've been trying for over 40 years. You know. Rel Malone let the sniper on top of St. John Baptist Church. A Houston police sniper was allowed to go on the top of a church, man, and wait for Carl Hampton and a man named Barty Hale. Carl had organized a rainbow coalition. It was People's Party 2, MAYO, which is Mexican American Youth Organization,
right,
and the John Brown Party, Barty Hale. Barty was shot. Don't nobody talk about Barty. Barty was wounded. You know. But the emphasis in the black community has always been the abuse of policemen and the black community. Mm-hmm. You know, when Swanland, Goodman, and Cheney, those three civil rights people, policemen was involved in that. No policeman to this day has been sentenced for killing a black person. Mm-hmm. To this day.
To this day. It goes back further when...
It goes back to the 19th century.
Campo, El Campo.
Yeah, thrown in the river with handcuffs on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was a major issue with us in the Panther Party. That's what the people was asking us. You know, we knew that in order to stop the oppression of black people in the 60s, because the whole 60s was a civil war. Mm-hmm. That was a revolution in the 60s. You know, Barack Obama was profiting by that revolution.
Exactly.
You know, the Black Panthers, America created us, but we weren't the first forces to confront violence with violence. No one talks about Robert Williams. The first organization to arm themselves against white oppression is this man right here, Robert Williams.
Self-defense, self-respect, and self-determination.
And there's a book that he wrote called Negroes with Guns.
Mabel Williams, the singer? Or is this a...
No, it's just white.
Oh, okay, it's white, okay.
All right. There's a book that he wrote called Negroes with Guns. His organization was called the Deacons. They had the first violent confrontation with the Klan. Okay, but no one talks about him. No one talks about Robert Williams.
Robert Williams.
Okay. Get the book, Negroes with Guns.
Negroes with Guns.
That's his book by Robert Williams, Negroes with Guns. He confronted the white power structure. His organization was called the Deacons. That was in the 20th century, that was the first black organization to organize themselves with weapons to defend themselves against white supremacist attacks, which was lynchings, bombings, church bombings. So it was this guy. But that's the point I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's black history. But a lot of folks never heard of Robert Williams. Hmm. And he went into exile. Many of them was, and it was male and females who had armed themselves in the Deacons. It wasn't all men. You know, his wife was with him. And these guys were Christians. All of them were ex-war vets. World War II war vets, and they confronted the Klan with guns. They defended the black community with guns. That state indicted him, and the country that gave him a political asylum, first he went to Cuba.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. He went to North Korea, then he went to China, Mao Zedong.
Okay.
And he was a ward of the state. Mao Zedong took care of him. Then he came back to America where he died He came back like in late 70s or 80s.
Okay.
But this was in the 50s. You know. Mm-hmm. Then your second armed group to defend themselves against white violence was the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party was founded in Lowndes County, Alabama. Not Oakland. Stokely Carmichael organized the Black Panther Party. That's fact, man.
Stokely Carmichael, I remember.
Stokely Carmichael.
I got something on him on audio.
Yeah, it was Stokely Carmichael, it was the founder, and it was organized around defending the black community with arms. Also a third political party. Mm-hmm. Franco was living that out. Mickey Leland was living that out. You know, mm-hmm. Voter registration and all that. That started all in the 60s. You know, if Carl Hampton would have kept People's Party too and would have lived, he might would be mayor of Houston now.
I see. Because when you were transferred to San Francisco with the recreation leader for the handicapped,
yes.
you move to Chicago.
Right? Yeah, well, what happened, like I said, my strength is recreation for the handicapped. Okay. Wheelchair basketball, all the things you see now, I trained in that. Archery for the blind. Mm-hmm. I can coach archery, baseball for the blind. I know how to do that.
Wow.
Swimming, track and field. But a partner of mine was recruiting for Vista. And he had the application and everything. I just filled it out, you know, with him, help him out. I'm quite selling the job already. And I got accepted. And I thought about it. Chicago, Woody, with giving me a new experience. Mm-hmm. And I went out there.
Bobby Seale.
Yeah, well, Bobby Seale was my cousin. Bobby's from Jasper.
Okay.
That's how I got into Panther Party. Okay. See, when I went to Chicago as a Vista volunteer, which is Domestic Peace Corps, I lived and worked in what is called the Ison YMCA on the near side, near north side.
Okay.
And this is where all them powerful gangs,
Young Lords, were.
Yeah, Young Lords, Cabrini Green that you see on television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived four blocks from that. It was constant activity up there. So I lived in the Y and worked in the Y. So all the gang leaders and gang members came to the Y. So they got to know me.
Yeah.
You know. And also what the gang leaders would do, let's see if you had a motel with 20 rooms. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to control your place. Every time you had a vacancy, they want a room.
Wow.
Every time you had a vacancy, they want a room. Every time you had a vacancy, they were in the room. Pretty soon, they'll have all 20 of your room.
Dominate the takeover.
Yeah, every month, they just pay you your rent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they did the Y. Mm. They lived all over the Y, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew what I was doing. And then me, I wasn't scared of them.
Right.
You know, I came from a background, too.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah, fifth warrior.
Yeah. You know, and so they gave me carte blanche. You know, everybody knew not to mess with Mr. Bob Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so I lived and worked there, and I was with them. I went to courts with them, went to their funerals, went to their homes.
Mm-hmm.
When there were gang fights and the breakout, a lot of time I would go and stop them. You know, so very early, I had established a relationship with the white gangs, the Puerto Rican gangs, or the white hustlers.
Okay.
Because usually, guys who were released from prisons and juvenile homes, they would go to YMCA and
okay.
get in the rooms.
Okay.
You know, and they knew they could depend on. And I lived that with them. In the mornings, I got up and opened up the gym mm-hmm. and the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them had courts to go to. I was sure up in courtrooms.
So subconsciously, you're keeping them somewhat out of trouble. At the
sure,
time.
Sure, sure. I was keeping them out of trouble.
You was keeping
some
them
of them. Yeah. Some of them.
Some of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah. Cha-Cha Jimenez of the Young Lords, he was the leader of 1,500 kid boys. Cha-Cha's coming in on October 29th, flying in from Puerto Rico to visit with me, you know, this month, you know. But I had an instinct because I was raised in an underworld. I was raised around Lee's Congo Bar and Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was raised on the waterfront. We opened our second waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would that be the Houston Ship Channel?
Yeah, I was raised on Ship Channel.
Okay.
Yeah, we had two clubs.
Okay.
Yeah. I was raised, like I said, you romanticize the Godfather, the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference between the Godfather, they were Italian, but you had a black Italian. Mm-hmm. I was raised around that. Like I would tell Franco, my father, my brother, my kid brother, and people think Franco's my older brother. Franco, I have an older brother named Jesse Lee who died in prison. I have an older sister named Dolly who died because hospitals in Jasper were segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents tried their best to get her to Galveston and she died. Then it's me.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Thurman, who lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a sister named Audrey who recently died of leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a brother named El Franco Lee. Then I have a baby brother named Billy Lee.
Okay.
Billy's teach school. He was nose guard for Oklahoma.
Oh, right.
You know.
OSU, Oklahoma University.
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State.
You know.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is we were all, I was the one by being that old as I really was right into, I started working and I didn't play marbles when I was a kid. I wanted to work in the club. I started working in the club when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. On Fridays and Saturday nights, my mother would do it. And I begged. Because here it is, man, you got music, you got hamburgers, you got barbecue, you got dancing, you got everything you want. Drink is in mm-hmm. there, you know. And I knew marbles were nothing. I want to get in that club. So I started working in the kitchen. My mother fired me when I was 18. Yes, she fired me. First job I was hired, first job I was fired from. My mother fired me. My mother fired me, man. I had a fight with a
customer. Was it justified?
I was feeling my, well, I'm 18 now.
Right.
And a guy that I felt was cursing too loud around my mother.
Okay.
I grabbed that nigga and beat his ass, drug him out to the parking lot, because I was much bigger then.
Right.
I haven't been like this.
Right.
Yeah. I'm thinking my mother going to, my hero, and kiss me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I drug him out in the parking lot, people pulled us off. I grabbed him, man, and beat that nigga and drug him out and threw that nigga out like they do in the cowboy
mm-hmm.
movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to apologize to him later, man. And I'm not proud of that either.
Right.
To this day.
Right.
But my mother took me to the back room where the numbers, the policy was all counted. We had a room that was about this size. The door is a little hole, a peephole, where you slide it up, and that's where people hand the numbers in.
Okay.
A round table like this, if I'm partial to it, where cats would count the numbers and the money.
Okay.
She sat me down, and she said, you know, I'm named after my father, she said, Junior, everything we have, our home, our food, our clothes, our cars, everything we have, come from the customer. She said, Junior, nah, you fine. Because it ain't going to sound right. It's Selma Lee. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Lee's son is jumping on the customers.
Mm-hmm.
I could never go on my mother's front club, not on Lyons Avenue again.
Why?
Not the front door.
Because that was the bread.
Yeah, man, she said,
bread and butter.
Everything we make, everything we have, come from the customer. She said, that same person that gets cursed loud and all that.
That's a part of that community you were talking about, that funded yourselves because you couldn't get work from other places.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had to do things yourself. And so y'all was one of the, you was pretty much part of the entrepreneur family.
We was a powerful family.
Mm-hmm.
We was a powerful family. We had 5 or 6 people working for us.
Mm-hmm.
You had to ship. You had these 3 people in the kitchen. Then you had waitresses. You had to have some bad waitresses to attract men.
There you go.
You know, my father knew to let my mother run the club. Because like he would say, hey man, them niggas ain't going to come here and see me.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come and see her.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to come and see. This was a card my mother had that my daddy passed out.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother never smoked or drank.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother died of lung cancer. Secondhand smoke. Lung cancer, man.
Wow.
At the age of 57.
Being in club.
Yeah, lung cancer. And my father would die 2 years later, because when my mother died, I knew my daddy would die.
Mm-hmm.
Would die.
Mm-hmm.
So my daddy cocaine himself to death, cognac himself to death. Wow. But that was his heart. See, when black men and women married then,
mm-hmm.
it was serious.
Regardless of what history tells us.
Yeah,
deep down yeah. It was.
My father and mother eloped. See, my mother came from a farming, a ranching background, timber. And my father came from a teacher's background. You know, like, this is my great grandfather on my father's side. That's my great grandfather, Hook Muckleroy, rancher. Look at that nigga how he dressed. That's my grandfather. That's my great grandmother. My great grandfather.
He was shot.
Yeah, that's Hook Muckleroy. His name was Hook Muckleroy. You know, cattleman. Cattleman. I got a blanket. When you go out of this room, look on that couch. Mm-hmm. You'll see an Indian blanket, mm-hmm. and that was Hook's blanket. Name Hook Muckleroy. Look how they dress, man.
I'm waiting on my slow camera, I'm sorry. There we go.
They sharp.
Yeah. It is obvious this wasn't the type of man you mess with. That was some men that white men knew not to mess. That was some black men that white men knew not to mess with.
Yeah. So with you being well rounded in the underground market, I mean the underground world in Houston, was that your incubator to getting it with the gangs and starting?
Yeah, I already had a background. I knew about dealing dope, man.
Right.
So I was 12 years old.
Right.
I went to New York with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
We'll sit on 100 pounds of weed.
Wow.
We traveled at night. Then at daytime, we found places to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the car, and I stayed 3 months in Chicago with my dad, in New York with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Then he and I.
Mm-hmm.
He had an apartment on 112 45th Street.
Wow.
When I was 12 years old, 145th.
Oh, 145th, okay.
Yeah. Well, no. 148th Street between St. Nick and Amsterdam. We had a dummy pad, the safe house.
Okay.
Where the niggas would sit at the table and roll the joints. But I sit on 100 pounds of weed, man. When I was 12. Now I went back at the age of 15, sitting on 100 pounds of weed with my dad for 3 months.
3 months.
And my dad just hung a key around my neck. He said, my dad real early started me out like the way I did my boys.
Mm-hmm.
You treat a person early like a man, he'll act like one for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what my father did.
No passes.
I'm working at a nightclub. I was 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, man.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was 18, so my mama fired me. Now think about that, man.
Yeah.
When other niggas were playing, looking at Hollywood, watching Mickey Mouse and all that,
mm-hmm.
I was listening to jazz, man, listening to niggas talking.
Mm-hmm.
I was serving people food. I was cleaning toilets. You know, I had pints, a little half pint with liquor stores closed at 10. I was delivering pints of whiskey, bootlegging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the last little person in the world they thought would have a bag, a dozen bottles of Canadian Club.
Hmm.
I knew how to gamble, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at this room.
You're sad.
Look what you're surrounded by. Yeah. Look what you're surrounded by.
Yeah.
I'm married to an Arab, man. I ain't no ordinary nigga.
Right. Right.
You know, so America ought to be thankful
mm-hmm.
that I didn't go to the underworld. There are a lot of Panthers followed me here. There are a lot of Panthers live in Houston from Chicago because
mm-hmm.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'm saying. The black underworld is about organizing. The mm-hmm. foundation of the black community was rooted on what is called the ill of the legit
mm-hmm.
that served the legit. The legit couldn't go to no banks and borrow no money. You know, that's what I'm saying. No one has researched the organizers in the black underworld.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen it. I live it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, I'll show you something. Now, I want you to read this song.
Okay.
I want you to start. Now, this man, World War II, him and my father, is a Sandy Booker, big long shark. He just died recently at 86 years old. World War II. This man writes for the Chronicle. I showed him this. I took him into this. This is this now. I want you to read from here to here.
Okay.
And look at that man's face.
Okay.
Read it out loud.
Nowadays, his herb comes from a middle-aged friend who operates a loosely organized neighborhood medicinal cannabis service. The supplier said he has 4 years providing marijuana to ailing elderly people and to younger folks suffering from AIDS and other maladies.
Keep it modality.
Maladies. He knows there are laws against what he is doing, but said he believes prohibition of marijuana for medicinal use is unjust. Said the laws protect the profits of companies that manufacture name brand pharmaceuticals rather than accommodate citizens who seek benefits from an herb that could be grown most anywhere. The supplier of medicinal cannabis grew up in a historic black neighborhood of Fifth Ward. He went to schools there and spent some time away during the troubled 60s learning about social activism and neighborhood organizing. Rather than follow a law that forbids medicinal cannabis, he said, he follows the traditions that establish it as a useful herb that can bring relief to suffering, that can help them make the most of their day and maybe tomorrow.
I was able to take what is illegit and it's functioning now. I don't take a penny from it. I've been able to take your neighborhood dope dealers who do cannabis and organize an organization that serves people with illnesses. That's functioning now, man.
That's functioning now.
Right now. Hey, man, this is from the Houston Crown Court.
Home remedy office.
And now, if I was a white man, if I was a white man doing that, they'd be writing a book on me. But I'm showing it to you. I'm a nigga. If Franco was a white man, Main Street would be El Franco Lee Street. Franco is named after a Cuban cigar. The Cuban seamen that would come into our nightclub the night Franco was born, my daddy high, and Cuban gave him a bunch of cigars, and my mom said, Bubba, what we gonna name him? He said, this shit name El Franco. So what I'm saying is, my culture comes from the black underworld, not the church. You know, in the black community. Yeah, keep that. That's me. That's Bill Ward. That man, so I took that man and showed it to him. He introduced him to everybody. He traveled with me a whole day.
So this was one of your purposes when you came back to Houston and regenerating Fifth Ward. This was one of those things.
Yeah, I've always have been around cannabis. I told y'all 12 years old.
Right.
And went to New York, 100 right. pounds. That means I'm sniffing it too with my dad smoking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I smoke it now for my cannabis. Yeah, I have some of the best. I'm a part of organizations. I was part of that proposition in California that legalized it. I was a part of that proposition in Oregon that legalized it. I was a part of that proposition in Alaska to legalize it. But I have a massive underworld distribution of cannabis. That man saying it. He met the people. Right here, people. And all the guy, and I have the doctors that supports it. So, and I tell people, cannabis, smoke, and the book I gave you. That's the book I give doctors, lawyers, and all of them. And God created cannabis.
Right.
Like I said, in the beginning, man and woman came last.
Right.
God laid everything out. You can't destroy cannabis, man. God make it. But what I'm saying, what people call illegit, I have formed the so-called cannabis, what they call, well, I said, you got pot salesmen, weed salesmen. I don't deal with them names. And they will cats who sell cannabis. I make a distinction. And they give them on and price, and people pay them. You know. Thomas Street, the doctors tell me, and I tell all the AIDS patients, don't take all that medication, just keep smoking that dope, man. And so that is that. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars being made in this community. And these guys, the guys who are selling it, they paying their rent, they go to, and they're part of a political movement to legalize it. That's what I had. Now, if I told you that verbally, you wouldn't have believed. You wouldn't have believed that if I told you that. That's me.
It's right there.
pull up, give it back.
Okay.
All right, here's Mr. Booker, World War II, Sandy Booker. That's his cane that he left me when he died. This is his ring. When he died, his wife gave him. That's an honor. Now, here he is right here. Read right here. Hey.
You want me to stop right here?
Just right here, just the top paragraph.
Okay.
That's Sandy Booker.
At 85 years old and in failing health, he takes one at a time.
And then go down around and here somewhere.
Okay. And then he opens the front door of the Fifth Ward home where he and his wife at 60 years old have lived together for a long and happy time. He sits on his front porch, visits with any neighbors who care to chat, soaks up some sun, watches the birds, squirrels, cats, and dogs.
Okay. Now, right here. Right there. Now, this is one of the Chronicles best writers. He retired now. He lives in Kansas.
It is the same plant his ancestors and people all over the world found helpful in great many ways for many centuries. Its seeds were valued as food. Its fibers in the stalks were made into sturdy cloth and strong ropes. Its stems and leaves could be turned into medicine.
Okay. So when you organize, what you do, let me just put it this way. Mm-hmm. I have never ever, I've always stated that I don't get down on a brother because he selected to sell cannabis to survive. I do get down on someone who sells crack cocaine. Okay. The organizations and which is, again, that falls under the invisible social construct. I'm invisible. If you saw me yesterday, never met me, you wouldn't know that I'm Bobby Lee. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And it's rare that I let people up strangers in my home. You here because of Joshua. You know. Because I figure whoever Joshua call a friend, he my friend.
I appreciate it.
I've been knowing Joshua since he was 4 or 5 years old. Man. Mm-hmm. That's important of your role mm-hmm. as a new generation historian. I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. But I do want to acknowledge the role that history has played to make me. I'm a part of that history, a reading study. I happen to meet some very gallant young men, 31 of them. You heard all their names. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, from Fred Hampton, one of the only county that got killed.
Right.
It was 31, man. 31 men and one woman named Sidney Smallwood. You know. We killed 17 policemen. And I'm not proud of that. Doubts in that kid. Mm-hmm. There's not a day past that I don't think about these boys. I feel secretary. I take that person. And there's not a day past I don't think about the policeman we killed.
Seven.
It was 16 white boys, policemen, and one black. Police collective. We killed 2 in Chicago. Cahooley and Rappaport, November 1969. Jake Winters. Shot him and waited for the other ones and they killed him. The next day, month, December 4th, policeman came, shot Fred Hamlin, Mark Clark. And here's the Panthers that were killed.
Yeah, I have that. That.
Huh?
I said I have that.
Okay. That's
that,
all. Up.
Yeah.
That's all.
I saw that.
It's a lot of human beings, man.
It is.
It is. That's a lot of human beings. And we wasn't getting paid every 2 weeks, man. We weren't getting no checks. Mm-hmm. You know. Youngest Panther, 14. He's here with me now, Poison. He was 14 years old. Now he has his PhD. I brought Poison home in 69. He was a gang leader in Chicago, and I knew someone was going to kill him. So I called my mother. I talked with his mother, but she was his mother on the south side was happy to see him in the Panther Party, as opposed to being a gang member on the south side. And he was the youngest guy in my cadre. I called him Poison, because he knew so much about drugs. He was smart. Mm-hmm. And I met him, he was 14 when I met him in 68. He was 15, 16 years old and I brought him home. Mickey was a recruiter for TSU School of Pharmacy. And Mickey got him into the School of Pharmacy.
Really? Mm.
And I always called him Poison. He lives in Houston. But he, strong Hugo Chavez supporter. He'd been in Venezuela
Okay.
Organizing the campaign for Hugo Chavez. Okay. So you want to talk with him, you know.
Okay.
But if you, when you go into a community, and I'll close on this, man, you want to identify the informal community, the invisible community, the hustlers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fighters.
Mm-hmm. The warriors.
That's the fighters. But that's the world I come from. I've always believed that. You know, Malcolm X, that kind of guy.
How did you go about, did you start the Houston Texas Trailblazer Association?
Yeah.
You and Jennifer
Patricia.
You have a piece in the Kitty Kong Powell Library.
Mm-hmm.
Hiram Walker.
Hiram Wilson.
Hiram Wilson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And how did that make you feel being part of the MA?
I'm still starred. I'm absolutely starred.
I go to that museum all the time.
Yeah, right? I'm absolutely starred.
Yeah.
Pat and I went to high school together. Her father, C.F. Smith. This is her father. Her father, T.F. Smith, organized the Tuskegee Training School for the Black Pilots.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know Pastor Daddy. And Pat and I, again, that's Pastor Daddy. Tuskegee.
Okay, Tuskegee.
That's Pastor Father. And that's the rule. That's what I'm saying. Pat and I recognize we've been knowing each other since we were 8, 9 years old, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's her son right there, me hugging her. That's Robert Prater.
Okay.
And he works for Franco now.
Okay.
He's a pilot. Robert, all of them come up together. We were talking about history, Pat and I, mm-hmm. and we were quite aware that the whites, because you remember now, the white supremacists don't want you to know your history.
Right.
Okay. And Pat and I started talking about black people in the state of Texas that were just people weren't acknowledging, like her father.
Mm-hmm.
That's very C.L. Smith, man. Mm-hmm. You know? So we decided just to research people here in Texas. And Pat gave it the name Texas Trailblazers. Every weekend, we was on the highway going to graveyards, churches, visiting people, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Was developing to that. And Pat, and we still have people we haven't seen. We never dreamed that it would end up in all your major libraries and all that. We met descendants of General Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Descendants of Sam Houston?
Yeah, yeah, wow. Descendants. Same way with me. I met with the Adams family who used to own my family.
Okay.
You know. So when we discovered Hiram Wilson, the pottery now is thousands of dollars. But when he was doing it, of course, slave masters had certain slaves that did things. You know, like that pottery right there. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff Hiram Wilson would do.
Okay.
You know. We're going to get ready to go, baby. So when we got that notice, man, I was moved. But like I told Pat, it's not just Howard Wilson that's going to be installed in that place. That's just you and I, man. We'll be there for him.
Absolutely.
You know. I was very impressed with that and moved with that, man. But my secret, and I tell Franco a lot, you know, Franco said, man, you know, put it this way, my brother, that's not a day past my brother and I don't talk.
Mm-hmm. Cause, you got him involved in politics.
Yeah, he's my paper brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you, May 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Franco must have been 18 years old. I'll be 70 years old, he's 16, man. 70, okay?
That's blessed.
Frank was a baby brother, but all of a sudden, because he's a powerful politician, people have a tendency to think he's my oldest brother. I won't say that. But I've always taught Franco. I would take Franco on dates when I was in high school, man.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only nigga going on a date and got my little 8, 9-year-old brother with me.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I going to buy a chick a hamburger, man, and not buy my little brother one?
That's real. No, that's real.
Where in the world that my little brother can't go with me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Franco can't go, can nobody go? Wherever I went in America, man, when I was working at the Recreation Center for the Handicapped in San Francisco, I sent for Franco. If he wanted to go, he went to work with me as a little boy and volunteered. When I was in Philadelphia, I sent for Franco. I saved my money. That's simple. In summertime. When I was in Newark, New Jersey, working at the Occupational Center for my strength is working with handicapped people. That's my strength. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about teaching. I knew how to teach archery to the blind, man.